Oh, and welcome to Caching in the Northwest, the only podcast dedicated to geocachers in the Great Pacific Northwest. Talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent tonight. So while you're trying to get your VCR to stop blinking 12 o'clock, we'll be caching in the Northwest.
And you know, we can't do this until we bring in our fleet-footed friend. Some say he knits his own socks. And others say Tim Hortons has a secret menu based on his preferences. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, just let me tell you, come on a hashtag geocache road trip with me. I will teach you a little bit about Tim Hortons' secret menus. That is a personal guarantee from the Land Monkeys. But, you know, what else can I share here?
Get the Land Monkey ice cap.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just really glad be back here with both of my friends tonight. We got you both back in your studios.
Wait, both your friends, as in we're it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Awkward silence. All right. Hey, you know what? Speaking of awkward things, we want to quickly remind you all that we appreciate the support of our patrons. Keep this podcast coming each and every week. Thank you guys for contributing to the show. We, as we always do at the end of the show, we're going to run through and thank each and every one of you individually. We're going to pick one of you to thank. But you won't know who it is until the end of the show. No, just kidding. Hey, if you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website.
And I echo the thanks of the Land Monkey. Thank you all. Now, for tonight's show, we're going to have a fun chat with our audience about winter games, geocaching, and, well, other related topics.
Indeed. So, hey, you know what? A reminder that if there's a milestone cache find that you are looking to celebrate, why not call it into 253-693-TFTC, share it with the Northwest community. Use that good old voicemail tool on the website. I would love to have that opportunity to be able to share what you have found and, you know, what's going on in your geocaching life with everybody else. That would be amazing. And I think I just noticed in the show notes, we have dropped in our glow for the evening. We joke that we make Jim Cold read the glows, but we're not kidding. Like, it just popped into the show notes now. So I'm handing it over to you, Wits End.
I was just thinking maybe we won't have a glow this week because we've got some other special features planned. And Derek, it just popped right in there. So without further ado, and I'm not even looking at the screen right now, let's see. This week's glow is from... was contributed by Zartimus. Zartimus posted, I don't know, well, let me rephrase that.
I am Zartimus.
The R is Zartimus. Wow. Okay. Zartimus posted a note for Rusty Bridge Cache. Now, I don't know if Zartimus contributed this glow to us or if somebody else contributed Zartimus's note as a glow, and I would love to tell you what GC code this cache is for, but as you mentioned, it was just posted in here, and there's no GC code pasted there. So, the note reads, the cache is back in place now, and I have to post the funny thing that happened when we went back. Since we seem to have a 1 in 10 chance of meeting 12-year-old kids at this spot, I carried the new cache container there in a garbage bag. If there was any activity, we'd just walk through and come back later. As luck would have it, there was no one there at the time we went. We had briefly considered placing the new cache in plain sight under the bridge, as it seemed to blend in well with the surroundings. Once under the bridge, it became obvious that underneath was the focal point of that area and would receive the most traffic. Any newly placed objects would certainly be scrutinized. It was while searching for a possible spot under there that I happened upon a well-hidden, not by geocaching standards, cache of dirty magazines. Cool. Prized objects for the 12-year-old male set to be sure. Well, one good turn deserves another. Grin. Since they made off with my cash, it only seemed fair that I return the favor and expropriate their Porno Mag collection, now sitting at the bottom of the garbage bin in back of Color Your World, if there are any dumpster divers among us. I felt a bit bad about it, so tomorrow I plan to return with a stack of my neighbor's old Martha Stewart mags to make up for it. Ha! And the GC code that was just pasted in is GC7028. How about that? A numeric GC code.
There you go. That is, that's funny. So,
I made a similar find one time while searching for a cache near George Fox University down in Oregon. My daughter was considering that for her college of choice. And I was out and coming around, and, oh, this must be the cache. And opened it up, and no, it was a dirty magazine collection. So.
What an odd place to keep it. But anyways, yeah. Moving along. Now, we have alluded, I have alluded prior to the show that we had some big news and a special interview that we're going to share. So we're going to get to that right away because we want to share that with you guys, with all of you listeners. So many of you may have heard that there was a shocking discovery this past week by a BC geocacher in the city of Abbotsford, up here just across the border. Now, this is the kind of thing we sometimes wonder if it might ever happen to us. Well, it happened to a friend of ours, and I had an opportunity to speak to him about his experience. We're going to share that with you now. Hey, listeners, welcome to a exclusive Caching in the Northwest interview. Now, yesterday, the news in the Northwest lit up with stories about something bizarre and unexpected found by a geocacher in Abbotsford, BC. And to tell us more about that, we're pleased to be talking with geocacher Casemond, the one who made this discovery. So, Casemond, welcome to Caching in the Northwest, and thank you so much for making the time to talk with us.
Hi, no problem. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been geocaching for?
I started geocaching about 4 years ago, December of 2013. Friend of mine roped me into it. I never looked back, and I'm here now, still geocaching, 6,500 finds later.
Awesome. That's amazing. So glad you're enjoying it. Well, and speaking of enjoying it, what kind of geocaching adventures do you prefer? Is it more urban caching or the backwoods and the trails?
I cache with my dog a lot. I've probably made about 3/4 of my finds in the company of my geodog, Mika. So it's safe to say we like the backwoods and trails most of all. But I've done everything, really. I've done a fair amount of urban, car caching, bike caching, boat caching, you name it.
Right on. Well, I think that sets us up now to get to the story that everyone's curious about. So earlier this week, we understand you were out geocaching. I'm not sure if by yourself or not, and you can clarify that for us. And, was it a pretty average geocaching hike for you?
In a way, it was. I'd met up with Yuling, who's a pretty seasoned geocacher from BC, and we had met up in Abbotsford, trying to find just as many caches as we could in the 5 hours or so that we had. We were hoping to get about 20 of them or so. Both cached before in this area, so we were just targeting the ones that we both hadn't found yet. And so basically, mostly driving from cache to cache. So we did a lot of driving. And then at some point she suggested, how about we go a bit for a hike there? There's these 4 caches in the woods there. Not really sure how to get there, but we can give it a try. And I said, sure, sounds good to me. I'm up for the challenge. Always are, right?
Awesome. And so that's when you made the startling discovery. So maybe you can describe for us what happened.
Parked the cars, and then we went across the field. Entering the woodlot there, like the wooded area, didn't show any maps on our trail, so we're just basically faring blind. But the caches that we targeted the 4 were kind of in a line, and from the logs we read that there used to be a trail there, so we just tried to find what was a trail. We didn't find much. We found some remnants of a trail, but was very overgrown. The first cache, which was sort of in the middle, we found pretty easily. We didn't find the cache. We got to ground zero pretty easy, and then ended up walking around for about half an hour, just trying to find it and trying to match up with the hint. And we never managed to do that. Just couldn't find it. So after a while, we said, "How about we travel north a bit, try the cache that's 200 meters north of here." And then maybe on the way back, we'll find this one. But let's see, because we're pretty tired of not finding anything.
Right.
So we struggled our way through the forest. It was pretty bad because there'd been an ice storm there, too. I don't know if you talked about that late December.
Oh, yeah. The terrible weather we've had.
And fallen trees everywhere. So it was hard going. Certainly not an easy hike. But we got pretty close. We got until within about 20 meters of Ground Zero, and we saw the stump that looked like it was our target, stump from the Hind. So we had to go through a bit of a depression to get there, and then up a hill a bit. So I'm doing that, and as I'm crossing that depression there, I almost step on something. I just barely, you know, I almost tripped over it, actually. And it's like, whoa, what's that, eh? And it was a skull. I mean, it was a skull, and I could see that. I've seen them before. So, there it was, sitting there in leaves.
That's
in leaves.
That's unbelievable. So at first, did you know what you had found?
I know it was a skull. I've seen them before, but, you know, like I've seen deer skulls and I've seen dead raccoons in the forest. I've seen all kinds of dead animals in the forest, but this one looked a little bigger and a little rounder, so I was a little worried about that. So I ended up actually sort of tipping it upright with my foot, and by then I was pretty sure what I was looking at. It was a human skull.
Oh, my goodness. That had to have been completely shocking. What did you do next?
What did I do next? I took a picture of it at first. Actually, I took a picture before I turned it upright first, and then I took another picture. And I told Yuling, who was a couple of meters behind me, I said, "Hey, there's a human skull here." She was kind of laughing, didn't believe it,
and right.
Immediately took a right turn and went to the stump a different way, so she didn't have to come anywhere near that skull. And then I left it where it was. And hiked up the hill and joined Yuling at the stump. And by then she had already found the cache, actually. So that was good. We had a find there. Yeah.
A couple of finds. So yes. Now, Case, we've all heard stories of this happening, but fortunately it seems to be a really rare occurrence of something like this actually happening. So having had the experience, what advice would you give geocachers or hikers who come across anything similar to this when they're out on the trails?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've hiked a lot, and it's never happened to me before. So hopefully, it'll never happen to any of the listeners either. I do a fair amount of backcountry geocaching, and somehow it's always kind of been in the back of my mind. You never know what you're going to find. People do go missing all the time. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, a guy went missing. He was a friend of a coworker. So he was talking about it a lot, and I know that his car was found like near a wooded area, and a couple of months later I actually went hiking in that area and geocaching, and the whole trip it was kind of in the back of my mind, like, you know, what if I smell something, you know, what if I see something, right? You know, you never know, right? Because right. Who knows what happened to the guy, right? They still haven't found him as far as I know.
Wow.
I was at a cache once actually, and I found it, and there's this awful stench, this smell, right? And got a little worried about that. So we kind of started looking around. What's that smell coming from, right?
Right.
And yeah. And then I found it. I mean, it was somebody, probably a camper nearby, had gutted some fish and dumped the entrails in the bushes there. Oh. And it just sit there rotting. So it was disgusting. But that was a pretty unnerving few minutes before I figured out where that smell came from. Because, you know, you start to wonder, you know, you never know.
Sure. Well, I mean, and here in this scenario, you actually found a human skull. So
I found a human skull. Yeah.
So, you know, what did you do? What would you think would be the best things to do in that scenario?
Well, don't do what I did.
Okay.
Because it was kind of weird because I think it was a bit of a delayed shock, maybe, like we were geocaching and we just sort of recorded it, and I knew I was going to report it, but somehow it didn't occur to me that I should probably do it right there and then, and we didn't. We ended up just geocaching more. You know, we ended up making two more finds and two that we didn't find. And then I went home and had some stuff to do, you know, there's household chores. And it wasn't until after, when I sat down at the computer to write my logs, that I realized, you know what, I should probably report this rather sooner than later. Don't wait a couple of days. This is probably a good time to do it right now. And good that I did, and not good that I didn't do it any earlier, because I sort of assumed the police would go out in the morning,
right? You know,
first night kind of thing. They didn't. They were out there, like, within minutes they were on the way to the coordinates that I gave them, and looking for it. And they spent hours at night scouring the forest for for human remains.
Wow.
So yeah, and I kind of regret that I didn't call any earlier. I mean, because you never know, right? I mean, something might have happened to it too, and I didn't think about it. At the time I thought, well, you know, it's been here probably a while. It looked like it'd been there a while. It was a fairly clean-looking skull. And so I figured, you know, it'll be there tomorrow too, right? So it's no big deal. But you never know. I mean, a coyote could have taken it and run off with it. And it would have been kind of, yeah, a pretty horrible situation if I knew it was there, but the police can't find anything, right? It would have been kind of really, really bad.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I would call right away next time. Well, I would not hesitate.
Do you think that maybe some of the pause is because I think many of us have found fake skulls as geocache containers before? And you know, did it cross your mind that this isn't real?
No. No, I mean, I've seen plastic skulls. this was real. I mean, there was no doubt about it.
Wow.
I know this was a real human skull.
Wow. All right. So you gave the police a call. What happened then?
Like I said, they went out right away. I'm not entirely sure what happened. My understanding from reading a couple of the news stories is that they found actually more remains still nearby.
Okay.
So yeah, there are definitely a body there. Wow. How it got there and what the circumstances are, I don't know, and I don't know if the police has any idea at this point. Hopefully, you know, I keep hoping that it's something a lot less gruesome than, you know, than a body dump from a murder or something like that. But you know, the chance is definitely possible that that's what it is.
Right. Well, I mean, and agreeing that clearly this was a person, and you know, we want to make sure there's a level of respect that's deserved for that person. And it's got to be a lot for you to process as well. And of course, we hope the police are able to identify who it was and provide closure to the friends and family. But you know, we're also concerned about the shock of the discovery and wondering how you and Hewling.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure about Yuling. I think she's a little creeped out about it. I'm not as much. I mean, I've seen dead bodies before, as in, you know, passed away relatives, and I've always found death a very how do you call it? It's a part of life, really, and it never creeped me out, really. It never has.
Okay.
And this didn't either. I mean, I wasn't creeped out by it or anything like that. And not even now, I don't feel that. But yeah, it's just not something, definitely not something I want to find again, though. This is not fun to find again.
Right. Well, I would agree with that. I would hope that none of us ever have to call in a find like that to the police. But thank you for doing the right things. Case, thanks for taking the time to share your story. We really appreciate that. Thanks for, as I said, informing the authorities about the discovery and allowing them to do their work on behalf of the loved ones of that person. And we also thank you for sharing your advice for those who may find themselves in your shoes one day and wish you the best.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I hope that if this brings closure to a family or maybe even convicting a perpetrator, if there is one, then I'll be glad that there's that outcome. But yeah, thank you for talking to me. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great night.
You too.
All right. So that was our interview with Casemond, who was very gracious to talk with us about his shocking discovery. And so as it's already been mentioned by Kev MacD in the chat, earlier this morning, the Abbotsford police did say that they had identified the remains as those of a missing person, missing since May of last year. It was Deborah Ann Heike, or Heike, I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name, but they did say it's not considered a suspicious death. And so I guess the most important thing is the family has closure.
Yeah.
So yeah, really not much else to say about that other than thank you to Case One for taking the time to do the interview with us. We just thought it was, you know, it's one of those things you think about sometimes, like Case One was saying when I was talking with him. You think about it sometimes when you're heading out on a trail, especially if for some reason, you know, something's going on. I've thought about it a number of times when we've headed out in the spring, sort of the first hikes of the year on the North Shore, when it's been a year where maybe they've lost some people mm-hmm. that they just haven't recovered. in the back country of the mountains here. And just, you know, it goes to your back of mind. What if I found a body? But usually you don't think too much more about it and you just get going. So there you go. Kind of a weird story.
It is, you know, it's one of those you hope you never find, but are you prepared if you do? And I think Casemond gave us some great tips on what to do, you know, if you find it. And, you know, it didn't freak him out, which is good. You know, I agree with him. Death is part of life, yada, yada. But, you know, coming across human remains is not something normal.
No. All right. Well, you know what, guys? Thanks for bearing with us as we shared that news with you in that interview. We're going to switch gears now. We're going to get into tonight's topic. We're going to lighten things up a little bit. We're going to talk about Winter Games because the Winter Olympics are kicking off.
Yes, they are.
It's one of my favorite times of the year. Winter Olympics, love them. But maybe we thought we'd start off with some memories of the Metrovan Geocaching Summer Games Winter Edition. Flashback for Wits End and myself who enjoyed oh my goodness, what was that sport even called, how we came into the event on the skis, the tandem grass skis or whatever it was, cross country grass tandem.
Yeah, Dora Moore had some creative name for it. That was fun. we carried the torch in and officially opened the games with quite the ceremony and pomp and circumstance. Yes.
And oh, you know what, speaking of Dora Moore, I've got to say, she messaged earlier that she was not able to make it live for the podcast tonight. She's had to fly last minute back east. So, you know what, folks, if you're over there in the chat and you're thinking about, oh, I miss Dora Moore in here, send her a tweet. Let her know you're thinking of her.
There you go.
Just like we do with Wits End. Send it to Dora Moore tonight.
Make her phone blow up when she lands.
There you go. But yes, my goodness, has she ever put together some great events, and that MBG Summer Winters game was a blast. That was an absolute hoot.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, we had a snowball fight to start the event, as I recall.
Yes, that's right.
Paper ball. And I thought that was especially creative and a good mixer in that you threw the paper snowballs, and then at the end you opened them up and found which team you were on.
That was very
cool. So that was a good way to choose teams up that way. The milk carton, milk jug snowshoes don't have a lot of traction on grass, as I recall.
I think that was by design. Yeah.
By design, yeah. Certain geocaching clues hidden in blocks of ice.
That's right.
Just a great weekend.
That was a lot of fun. So yeah, so there you go. So, you know, there's always ways you can come up with having events that have, even in the summertime, have a winter's game theme. Mm-hmm. But, you know, speaking of winter sports, guys, what are your favorite winter sports, either to watch or participate in?
You know, the ones I like to watch, I've never participated in. You know, it's amazing. Every 4 years, winter sports comes around, and you think, oh, yeah, there's, you know, this and that. And, you know, watching, like, say, cross-country skiing and seeing the strategy involved. And one that I always gravitate towards is biathlon. I don't know why. I think it's just an odd combination. But, you know, I like it. And then the bobsled, luge, skeleton, you know, anything with the
sledding sports.
The sleds, yeah. I really enjoy those.
So, you know, biathlon is a funny one because a lot of people look at it in context of current life and go, oh, yeah, what a weird thing to do to cross-country ski and shoot. But as Nordic countries, that is actually standard military training. It very logically fell into being a Winter Olympic event because it was something that they did anyways. But it's considered one of the toughest Winter Olympic sports.
I mean, you're ranked right up there. Yeah, you're going all out, and then you've got to still your body enough to make a consistent shot and then move on. It's one of those things I watch and go, wow, how do they do that?
There you go. Over in the chat, GeoNavPro says, Mrs. GeoNavPro says, tree well exploration on snowshoes is one of the toughest winter sports. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, we heard a little bit about that last week. If you want to hear more, go back and listen to episode 236 about snowshoeing and geocaching.
Absolutely. So, Witsend, how about you? Favorite winter sports?
Oddly enough, very well, as far as we're talking Olympic sports, very similar. The biathlon has always fascinated me, probably because, well, I live in the U.S. and everybody out here has guns, right? No, that's not true. And the bobsled. Well, bobsled / luge / skeleton, because skeleton exists, of course, because somebody decided luge was not dangerous enough. Let's go head first down the thing. But yeah, they fascinate me to do that. In fact, to get in the spirit, just a week ago, my family and I sat down and watched Cool Runnings again. Always a good time.
Nice.
That's awesome. So for me, my favorite is a little bit different than you guys. I'm more into the freestyle ski side of things. Now, a little bit partial because that was my venue when I worked at the Olympics, but absolutely love moguls.
Mm-hmm.
Aerials. Aerials just blows my mind. Now, again, first Canadian Winter Olympic gold medal won on Canadian soil was the aerials.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. And the my favorite, though, my absolute favorite is ski cross. I don't know if you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to think, is that the one that I'm thinking of with it's almost like a short motocross track?
Yeah, so four athletes compete at a time in the heat, and it's huge jumps. And
I love watching that. Yes.
It's just the most amazing. And it's contact, too. Like,
it's like roller derby on skis.
Yeah. It is just the most amazing sport ever. I just love it. I could watch that all day long. That is my absolute favorite.
Of course, I had to root. I remember watching that 4 years ago at the last Winter Olympics and had to root for the German fellow because, as the narrator or commentator was introducing the athletes, he got to him and he mentioned him and he said, and his wonderful mustache. And he had a huge handlebar mustache after his ski cross. I'm like, well, he's my new favorite athlete.
It's not very aerodynamic, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing with that sport is sometimes it's not about the aerodynamics. If you can be the last person standing,
the person that wins is the last person on their feet. Yeah.
That sport is awesome. So, you know, those are the ones that I love and those are the ones you guys like. So, but there's so many.
Ski jump. That's amazing how they're literally flying through the air.
Yeah. It's not really jumping, though. It's more falling with style.
That's true. Falling with distance.
Yes.
There you go.
We could go on. Short track speed skating. You know, Apollo Ohno really brought that home to Washington State for us.
Oh, is he from Washington?
Yes. From Federal Way. I didn't know. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then there's another one, you know, and he's in well known and he's kind of from Federal Way. And I can't remember his name. I apologize. You know, in a couple of weeks, we'll all be saying his name.
Right. Mm-hmm. As soon as that event starts again.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Cool. So we've already kind of talked about this, but will we be watching any of the 2018 Winter Olympic events?
I'm currently recording them.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So yeah, between podcasts, I went upstairs and my wife was watching and there was moguls. They mentioned ski jumping and ice skating already.
Yeah.
This is before the opening ceremony. So I guess none of these really count.
Well, this is the thing is it. And I can't remember if the Summer Games are the same way, but it gets to the point where there's so many competitions that are going on that they actually have to start the first runs of them before the opening ceremonies.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that they give everybody time to compete. Mm-hmm. Now, something I did see tonight that I thought was interesting. Mrs. Landmonkey was watching figure skating. And no, how do I really feel about figure skating? Yeah. Anyways,
it's always more enjoyable with a good bash to the knee.
You know, that's only been done once.
Sorry, did that slip out? Is that that slip once?
Wow.
Love it.
Anyways. I wish a hockey game would break out.
It did in one time. So she's watching that, and I noticed as they were, you know, they were ranking the different countries, and I think Japan was currently in first, and then Canada, and then what I thought was Russia, but it wasn't. It was the athletes competing from Russia.
Yes.
So is that because of the ban on Russia this year?
Yes, there's a ban on Russia. Now, I had heard, and I didn't take the time to follow it up. There are 8 athletes who are allowed to compete from the Russian team, but not under the Russian flag.
Okay.
They were confirmed that, you know, they didn't have anything to do with this doctor. And, you know, they were lumped in with the team, but... somehow they pleaded their case and they were able to compete in the Winter Games, but not under the Russian flag. So, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, athletes formerly known as Russians.
Yeah, that's just weird to me. I mean, Russia not in the Winter Olympics.
That's their big one too, right?
Yeah, it'd be like the USA not being in the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And it's not because they're boycotting it. No, they've been disqualified.
Yeah, it's the other way around.
For doping.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know who else was boycotting? No, he's not boycotting. He has stepped down. Bob Costas will not be broadcasting the games this year.
Oh.
Hosting.
Oh, so that's from the American television coverage?
USNBC hosting, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that's a changing of the guard there, eh?
How about mm-hmm. that?
Funny stuff. All right. So... If we swing it back to geocaching, is it considered a sport to go after T5 caches in the winter?
It's a sport to go after T5 caches any time of the year.
Anytime. Now, are these caches that are T5 year round or caches that are only T5 during the winter?
Well, here's why I'm asking the question. Or are they caches that are T5 caches in the summer, but in the winter, they're not?
Like what, frozen lakes and things? Like
frozen lakes.
Or are they T5 caches because I'm involved? And they didn't need to be.
I think that's most caches.
That's quite a few, yeah.
Hey, it's true. Okay. I think I can't really argue. It's true.
All right. Well, you know, I always thought it would be kind of cool to have some sort of geocaching event that coincides with the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like we were discussing off the earlier part of the show here, Dora Moore had the summer geocaching games that were winter themed, and that mm-hmm. was so much fun. And I know we'd had some talk up here about doing like geocaching games or some sort of major fun event during the winter time and that kind of Winter Olympic themed, but the Northwest weather is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
That doing that outdoors, it's a long shot to, you know, even go 2 weeks out to register an event to do this. And all the work that goes into putting an event like that, I think unless you had an indoor venue, it's really not going to be, it's going to be a bit of a crapshoot. And then, you know, maybe you say, oh, well, you know, let's plan it for somewhere where it's snowy. And if you don't live there, now if you live somewhere where it's snowy, so, you know, up into the interior, up in the mountains or whatever, and you got enough people you can get together, then awesome. That would be so much fun. But if you don't and you're trying to get people to travel out there, that's going to be a challenge too. So yeah, I don't know of a lot of events. Oh, heard piano. I don't know of a lot of geocaching events that happen sort of in alignment with Winter Olympics. Is there something I'm missing or? Not really.
I don't know.
All right. It's an idea. So, hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. If you're listening to the podcast and you go, well, come on, Land Monkey, of course, it's blah, 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 GC, whatever. You know what? Tell us. Inform me. Educate me. I want to learn.
Me too.
Me three. Are there any new winter events this year that weren't 4 years ago?
I don't know. I noticed that in the chat, a couple of folks had been saying that it looks like ski cross isn't in the Winter Olympics this year. And I must have missed that announcement that they're pulling ski cross. That sucks.
Yeah, well, according to thestar.com, there are four new events set to debut at the Pyeongchang Olympics.
Such as?
Long track speed skating.
As opposed to short track?
Yeah, now they mentioned curling, and I think that's always there, but it says mixed doubles, so maybe it's a specific category of curling. I don't know.
Oh, so it would be men and women on the same team.
Correct, yes. Okay. And snowboarding and alpine skiing.
You know, okay, they demonstrated snowboarding and alpine skiing last Olympics. I remember, you know, it was just a demonstration event.
Okay, so hold on. Snowboarding has been in the Winter Olympics for years. So I think it's some particular discipline in snowboarding that they're talking about.
It says men's and women's big air.
Okay, big air.
It could be confused with big hair, which is the 80s band.
No, big air. Big air is like an X Games.
Okay.
Snowboard. It's basically now I can't remember if big air uses the half pipe or not. So the Olympics
snowboarders ride down a ramp and launch into the air, performing a single trick. The big air ramp in Pyeongchang is the highest in the world at about 43 meters and has a 40 degree slope.
Wow.
Yeah, that's insane.
The athletes do tricks can include a front side 1080, perhaps the most difficult in the sport, a backside 1440, and a double cork. Okay. And if you're putting two corks in the wine bottle, that's just mean.
Well, you got to get them out while you're, you know, spinning around. And now, you know, they've gotten into four digits for rotation.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Just start describing those in binary.
There you go. Three hams in the chat says big air snowboarding, mass start in speed skating. Oh, that won't be interesting.
Accident waiting to happen.
Mixed doubles and curling and a team skiing event where the addition ratifies where the addition's ratified Monday by the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah. Alpine skiing mixed team.
Last minute.
Yeah, exactly. You know, go ahead and buy your tickets. We'll see if we're going to put it in there or not.
Well, okay, you can compete tomorrow.
It's like reading a glow.
Sometimes.
Oh, ratified Monday. That's insane. Oh, well.
So the preliminaries were... Well, never mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Never mind, indeed. So that's interesting. So, yeah, some new sports. I'm saddened that ski cross never really made it formally into sticking, because to me that's just one of the most amazing sports. So I will continue to watch my Winter X Games, because honestly the sports I like are highlighted a little bit more there, but that's okay. It's all good.
The long track speed skating mass start is described as NASCAR on ice. Bumping drafting strategy. Yeah.
Wow.
Strategy. Yeah. Got it.
Strategy.
Okay.
Gotcha.
TV ratings. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the big driver, which is, again, I don't get why ski cross, I guess people didn't get into it. It wasn't getting the ratings, because to me, that's an amazing sport. But there you go.
I have a webpage up with some demonstration sports that never, you know, they demonstrated it, but it didn't get approved as an official event.
Such as?
If I'm pronouncing it right, ski joining, skiing behind horses in 1928.
Okay.
That would be interesting. the winter pentathlon, that's cross country and downhill skiing, pistol, fencing, and horse riding.
Oh, I like that one.
1948.
Are they concurrent or?
I don't know.
Filed under what could go wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, fencing. How do you fence on skis? I have a sense
that it's a pentathlon in the same way the summer games have pentathlons and decathlons. And heptathlons.
I'm sure.
Dog sled racing in 1932.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, but
there are no animals in the Olympics, are there? It's just human bodies.
Yes, there is. Summer Olympics.
They have horses.
Steeplechase.
Huh? Yeah. You're right. The equestrian events.
They have horsies.
But that's it, right?
I think so.
Yeah, you're right. So there you go. Ice stock sport, a German variant to curling in 36 and 64.
There you go.
Military patrol that led to biathlon in 1960. It was in 1928, 1936, and 1948. So interesting, right?
That is interesting. And, you know, some of these sports stuck and some didn't. And I think when you look at the ones that have been added in this year, their disciplines or variants on sports pretty much that all were in there already. So, you know, mixed doubles and curling. Well, you already had curling.
Right.
So you're just sort of mixing up the teams a little bit.
Right.
Big air and snowboarding is you're just adding another one of the X Games disciplines around snowboarding into the snowboarding sport. You know, the NASCAR skating event. Again, you're just, you know, adding a variant. So I kind of prefer when you add a new sport as opposed to just continuing to add disciplines to existing sports. I think I think it kind of waters down the existing sports when you just keep disciplines.
Apparently in the 92 Albertville games, they also demonstrated speed skiing. It's not to beat another person down the mountain, but to ski the fastest time possible.
The winner
was clocked at 142 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
It says, for comparison, the speed of stable free fall is 120 miles per hour.
So how do you go faster? That's insane.
So that's faster than the force of gravity.
Yeah, faster than free fall.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I love it.
Also now, in the category of what could go wrong.
Wow. You know, it's funny. It brings up, you know, the wide world of sports in the agony of defeat, where they show the downhill skier rolling through. That just comes up to your mind.
Always does.
On this page, they also talk about future events, future sports that they're lobbying for.
Okay.
Team alpine skiing. Ski mountaineering. Here's one. Ski orienteering.
Hey.
Serious? That's actually... Now
we're approaching geocaching.
Exactly.
There.
And of course, the winter triathlon, which involves running, mountain biking, and cross-country skiing all on snow.
But do they have tandem cross-country skiing with a battery-operated lantern? Because I think there's something to be said for that.
I don't see that discipline in there.
Land Monkey and I do hold the world record for that currently.
Well, I think I think Land Monkey has some connection to the IOC. And go ahead and start lobbying for that that event.
Oh, I see. Yes, indeed. Funny.
Now, I was in France in 1999, and it was, maybe it's 2000. Let's see. Oh, I was there in 1999 and 2000.
It was after Albertville, yeah.
Albertville. I was in Albertville, where they held the 92 Winter Games, and all the stars from the 92 Winter Games came back to the arena to put on a show. And it was, if it wasn't on Valentine's Day, it was that week.
You mean skating?
Skating, yes. Okay. So, you know, figure skating.
Right.
And I thought, what an opportunity. I can score points with my wife, take her to, you know, Olympic level ice skating event. And so a friend and I went down, the tickets were cheap. I mean, I was surprised. We got tickets literally on the ice for $40 a piece.
Wow.
And so, I mean, when they walked us out, we walked down past the regular ice rink and out onto the ice where they had a platform set out. And were out there and you're watching the skaters as they're, you know, making their jumps and such, you're close enough to see their facial expressions and you can tell they don't know if they're going to make it. They're looking like, oh, and you can see the relief when they land.
Those boards are coming up awful fast.
But
the same facial expression I have when I go geocaching.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the closest. And, you know, being that close to an elite athlete, it's impressive. It doesn't matter what sport it is, but, you know,
having... I will definitely give you that. I give figure skating a hard knock, but those athletes are definitely athletes. You have to be in amazing physical condition, have unbelievable core strength and balance, and to be able to pull off that stuff that they do. So absolutely. It's just not a sport that interests me. That's all.
I agree. And you know, it's one that my wife likes as well. So I end up watching it or watching at it.
Watching it. I end up in the same room when it's on the television.
You know,
yeah,
it's a lot like NASCAR. I'm just waiting for the falls and the accidents, right?
You know,
they're going to wipe out and it's going to be spectacular.
I think a lot of people probably watch figure skating that way. Figure skating, ice dance, and what are they? They've got a whole bunch of variations in there as well as team scoring and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Ice dancing is really quite interesting. I think
I got to be honest. I don't know the difference between figure skating and ice dance other than there's like different rules. But to me, it all looks the same.
You've got to hit certain moves at certain times in ice dancing. So,
okay. Fair enough. Thank you for clarifying the difference for me. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Well, and the couples ice dancing is fun too. I like, but
fair enough.
Yeah. The lifts and things like that. Yeah.
All right. So,
any other sports we should mock? Or I mean, talk about?
Well, you know what?
Discuss in an open forum.
Hard time until I tried it.
Now you are the. How come you're not going to Korea as one of the curling?
Because I suck at curling, but it's fun. And
yes, but among the three caching the Northwest host, you are the most experienced and therefore an expert.
You are the caching in the Northwest curling champion.
That's right.
Yeah, fair enough. Curling is fun. I think it's mostly fun when it's like a social, because it is a very social event, or a very social game, which makes it a lot of fun. But it is a lot more work than you think it is when you just watch a bunch of people go out and go, I can do that.
Well, it doesn't look easy. Let me tell you that.
Okay. Well, then you are in the minority of people I've ever heard talk about it. I could toss a rock down the ice. Well, yeah, you probably can, but
I can toss a rock down the ice, but
you probably can't do it right.
Yeah. No, I know that.
And I can go down a hill and skis, not at 142 miles an hour. Well, not intentionally. Well,
like that's 200 kilometers an hour. Like that's insane.
It's insane. Yeah.
Crazy, 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 crazy. All right. So yeah, you know what? I don't think I would give any Olympic sports, I don't think I'd drag them through the mud too much. I don't think there's really anything that is out there that I don't think qualifies as an Olympic sport. I thought it was interesting when you went through the list and dog sledding was on there. Now, of course, I guess if you're really into dog sledding, you'd probably follow the Iditarod and things like that.
Right. And, you know, that would be a big one in Russia, Alaska, Norway. I mean, you know, that was a valid means of transportation. It still is.
There you go.
Okay. I'll throw this out there. I don't like the blue paint on the snow in the skiing events.
At least they use blue.
Yeah. I mean, you know, these are professional athletes. They should know the lanes. They're out there. It looks like they're skiing through graffiti to me.
You know why they put most of the marking in the snow? Is not always for the athletes, is actually often for the television, because it can get very difficult. And if it's a judged or timed sport, you need it to be able to mark when they hit certain areas. As well, moguls and aerials in downhill skiing Do you know why they do them at night? Those events are always held at night.
Better contrast in the snow?
Better contrast. When those guys launch against a white sky in the wintertime, you can't see them.
Better contrast for the cameras, not for the athletes. Cameras,
well, also for the athletes, they can get disoriented as to up and down. So that's why those events are always at night. So there you go. A little bit of trivia for you.
Interesting.
Anyways, I think we've probably beaten this one.
And geocaching on ice.
Geocaching on ice. I think we've all done that. You need crampons.
Yeah. We talked about that last series, week.
Is there a series of compulsories on ice that you have to do for geocaching?
There should be.
I think there should be still be competition in the compulsories for ice skating, but that's just me.
I thought there were compulsories. But they get them out of the way very early.
I don't think they do them anymore.
Brian Lang asks, is this a geocaching podcast?
Well, you know what? Speaking of geocaching podcasts, why don't we wrap it up? We can talk about what's coming up that is far more geocaching related in upcoming episodes. And then we can segue right into the after show. What do you think, guys?
I love it. So next week, we're going to be talking with geocacher Lazy Bones about creative cache containers. This is more of the Olympic event for hiders, right? The creative cache containers.
Right.
The week after that, we are going to talk about the geocaching apps roundup. So what app are you using in your geocaching? Maybe you want to share that with us. Send an email to feedback@cachingnw.com and let us know what you're using, and we'll let you know if it's the right one. Oh, wait. That may not have come out right.
No, I think it came out how you intended it, okay. But that may not be right. That will wrap up the shows for February already and take us into March. The next show, episode 240, will be March the 1st, which will be Top Cache Tips for Van Victoria, BC, with Land Sharks. That's with a Z. Followed up by March 8th, and we will talk about event hosting top tips.
Right arm. That sounds like a lot of fun. All right. Well, you know what? We want to thank our faithful Denali level supporters, and that includes Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, and WorldCaching.com. Folks, if you want to know more about supporting this show, click the Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for, we're going to randomly pick one of our patrons to... No, I'm kidding. We're going to read through all of you guys, and that the list has grown. So you guys are going to put me to the test, see if I can get through it all in one breath. So here we go.
I believe in you.
Thank you very much to Subway Mark, Doramore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino, Seattle, Acrodoc, OBXKey, Camp Clan, B Pendragon, Kev MacD, Billy Robson, Nice, and Antaeus.
Nice.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. Know, you went through those quickly, but we have two new patrons this week.
We do.
Yeah, G Nice and Antaeus. So
is it G Nice or is it? I just pronounced it Nice, as in like the rock.
I always went with G Nice because it's his first initial last name, I believe.
Okay. Well, you know what? He should really just let us know.
Exactly.
There you go.
And could
call in and pronounce it himself.
Yes. Nice.
Even better.
You mentioned our faithful Denali level supporters of Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, and WorldCaching.com, correct?
The start. Always do.
I know you did, but I wasn't paying attention. No, I was actually working on FATAS items.
Okay. Well, you know what? Thank you very much to every single one of you that supports this show. We really appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you guys.
We absolutely could not. Thank you so much to all of you. And to all of us hosties. Mr. Lane Makita, let's say somebody wanted to reach you. Where would they find you?
Well, they might find me on the side of a mountain somewhere. But, you know, if you want to reach me electronically, the website's landmonkey.blogspot.ca, and there's been some new posts coming out there lately. As well, we always encourage people to follow us. Twitter, Instagram, Periscope, it's @landmonkeygc. On Facebook, search for Team Landmonkey, and... new episodes keep coming out on YouTube. Just search YouTube for LANMONKEY. That's Land Monkey. Wits End, my friend, where do people find you?
You just never know where Wits End's going to turn up, actually. But online, social media-wise, probably head over to Twitter or Facebook. Just look for Wits End. That's Wits End with a Z in the middle. Chris of the Northwest, how about you?
Well, much like my friend Wits End, look for Cashing in W. That can be Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. You just never know where I'm going to be. You know what? Head on over to cashingnw.com/hosts. Read our bios and find all those links that we just mentioned and a few extra that we keep hidden just there for you.
That's awesome. Folks, we want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Cashing in the Northwest. Remember that you can be a part of the show. All you have to do is call 253-693-TFTC, leave us a comment, ask a question, send us one of those extra golden medals you got lying around in the bedroom any time of the day or night. And of course, you can email us at feedback@cashingnw.com. Also, your support helps to keep quality shows coming. So if you liked this show, please click the Patreon link on the cashingnw.com website and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. This show is produced by Chris Infinar and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Powlitz. This show is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Infinar. Now, folks, as always, stay tuned for that.
The After Show.
That. Stay tuned for that.
For that, the After Show. Yeah, I didn't think that through before I said it.
Oh, hey guys, the After Show is almost a separate show. It's a time where we have more one-on-one conversation with those listening live. If you wanted to have something mentioned in the After Show, just use the hashtag FTAS, we say FTAS, for the After Show, and we will talk about it during
the After Show.
There you go. Sometimes smooth. It's a continuation of an ongoing topic. Other times it's completely different and often quite random.
It can be. It can be. Hey, you know what? I did have an interesting news story that I wanted to share off the start. I noticed a tweet came through today on my Twitter feed that said that the Kootenai Lake Ferry Service is having some temporary service changes from March 11th to April 21st. And then from February 19th to March 30th, there's going to be a round two consultation on the future of the ferry. Now, if you're not familiar with this, this is two ferries, the MV Osprey and the MV Balfour. They operate, two of them operate in the summertime, the year round the Osprey runs. And it takes you from the community of Balfour at the junction of Highway 3A and Highway 31 in British Columbia. Takes you up through the lakes, and it's an amazing, I think it's the largest inland ferry in the world, I believe. Mm. It's also home to one of the new virtual caches. That's GC7 Bravo 68 Foxtrot. So, you know, if you want to check that out, that's a good way of finding out about it. But we've taken it before. It's a really interesting ferry ride because, again, it's a freshwater inland ferry. It's just not something I'm used to. I'm used to ferries being on the salt check, so it's kind of cool. So anyways, be aware that if you're planning to take it between March 11th and April 21st, because of the annual low spring water levels, they're doing some servicing. I think they're doing dredging is what's going on.
Well, that's what the research department says. Arrow Lakes Ferry Balfour Terminal has a very shallow channel. From the lake to the terminal, they need to dredge the channel to keep both ferries operational.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, research department.
And I looked it up on the map here. It is, for the U.S. reference, it's just north, direct due north of the Washington-Idaho border.
Makes sense.
And I was curious about that because my in-laws over in the Coeur d'Alene area are in Kootenai County.
Ah, yep.
Although it ends with an I, not a Y. In the county name, so I wondered if it was, but yeah, cool.
There you go. There you go. So hashtag FTAS. I see some talk about heavy or Falcon Heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite the story. Elon Musk, that guy's got swagger. I mean, come on.
He's got one less car.
He's got one less car.
He still owns it.
That's right. He knows where it is.
He's run out of garage space is what it amounts to.
But he's setting a new speed record with it.
Yeah, no kidding. And oh my goodness, the landing, the parallel landing of those two booster rockets.
That was like a video game. That was really cool.
It's like watching a science fiction movie. You watch mm-hmm. it and you go, that couldn't really have just happened. Like, that's got to have been editing or something. There's no way. It's just mind-blowing. Unbelievable.
So, did you see that the Tesla is not on track to go to Mars? They actually overshot what they were aiming for, you know, the entire planet of Mars. So, you know, the thought was maybe they're just like, you know what, hit it with all it's got and let's see what we can do. You know, let's open this baby up and see what she can do. rather than, you know, actually they made a miscalculation. I don't know. But
made a few special modifications myself.
She's got it where it matters, kid.
Don't worry, she'll hold together.
Yeah. And so the top is down on the Tesla, so they really don't know what space is going to do to the interior of that car over time.
Fair enough. Oh, my goodness. That's just too funny.
If they left the top up, then, you know, it sure would be fine.
It wouldn't have been as good a picture, though. It wouldn't have been as quality of video. I mean, just, it's just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Just a brilliant maneuver.
Oh, let's see. So the Falcon Heavy has the potential to lift 16 GPS satellites in one launch, says Breitling.
That's the entire constellation, isn't it? 16?
No, 24 is the entire constellation.
24. So, geez, you could replace more than half of an entire constellation of GPS satellites.
Getting them into position would be tough.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Did you happen to hear the story of the Russian rocket that launched a GPS satellite?
Maybe. Why don't you tell us?
They made a mistake and put the launch was moved because of weather at the last minute, and they didn't update the launch coordinates on the rocket. So when it launched, it put the satellite way off of course, too far off of course for it to correct itself, you know, for the fuel on board to correct itself.
Okay.
It's like, oh, you know, it's like, oh, no, we're not launching at Cape Canaveral, Florida. We're launching it in Texas. And they didn't change those coordinates. I don't know what the two Cosmodrones were, but yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
That's an expensive screw up.
Exactly.
All right.
Three Ham says he only has one beer left in his house. So go ahead, please send him some more. ASAP.
There you go. Why is the rum always gone? All right. What else? Kev MacD says, hashtag Fatas, the land sharks have a new mystery cash out. He shares the GC code. Struggling for a moment. What do we call these codes? Wow, that was pretty sad. GC code GC76 Golf Foxtrot Delta.
Well done, Mr. Monkey.
Thank you. I don't even have a little cheat sheet on my screen.
I do. Oh, Breiling says the batteries in the Tesla are dead. They were only expected to last 12 hours, but look how many miles they got off of those batteries.
That's right.
You know, that's what you look for in an electric car. You look for miles. Made it around the earth a couple of times.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. IHAM says, Buffalo, 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 Buffalo is a complete sentence. And it's okay. True.
Okay.
If you want to know more, go to Buffalo and talk to the buffalo there who buffled Buffalo. Or you can look up GC6Z. You like that?
Nicely done.
Charlie, Mary, Charlie, Mike, Yankee. That's the Buffalo Cache by, or Buffalo Tales by Team Noltex.
Ah, good old Team Noltex. Do they listen to this podcast?
They better. They better be listening right now.
All right. Well, if they are, shout out to Team Noltex. I haven't done a lot of your caches, but the ones I've done have been fabulous.
Yes.
Yes. This one, I came across three red herrings in the cache description before I worked out the puzzle. So,
who puts red herrings in their geocache puzzles? That's just me.
Norwegians. They like the lutefisk.
Ah, there you go.
And of course, Team Finn, guess what? They're holding an event.
They're hosting an event.
Really?
I know. Shocking, isn't it? You know, guys, we are envious of your streak. Thank you so much for hosting events right here in the Northwest. This one is National Pancake Day, February 21st. Join us at the Renton IHOP at 7:30. That is GC7 Hotel, November, Charlie Echo. National Pancake Day.
National Pancake Day. There you go. All right. We had some Fatas from Start Cacher.
Mm-hmm.
Says, I have three geocaches hidden that I will release in the next few weeks. Ooh, that's exciting. The first one, the first will be one I hid a couple days ago. My tracks in the 4 inches of snow lead to it now. They're predicting 6 to 12 inches of snow in the next 24 hours. And as soon as I see we've gotten a couple of inches, I'll submit and hopefully it'll be published while the snow is still falling. Nice. That's awesome, Start Cacher.
Yeah, you don't want to post it with the tracks leading right to it.
Straight to it, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Very good. All right. So, what do you think? We got through it?
We did it.
We did it. Going to call it a night?
I think so. Folks, thanks for listening. We really appreciate you. Go ahead and share Caching in the Northwest with your friends, with your family, with the people that you don't really care about. Share it anyway. But until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.